I step out into that Bruegel painting of the snow and the crows. Oak trees and thorn dykes stand out in the white-black coral. I feel alive, necessary and needed. I have to be my best self today, fight what has happened or creatures will go hungry. The snow is heavy now and layering up fast on the land. Leading the hay to the ewes on the quad bike in the heavy snow, I become white myself. Thick white snowflakes carpet me as I head up the road. You see them falling by the millions like duck down feathers. Some land on my face and crumple into my warm eye sockets and blind me with a soft wetness. I feel the lightness of a snowflake land on my tongue, soft, fat, delicate, like the snow god had placed it on my tongue for Holy Communion. The quad bike tires make a crunching sound, packing down the snow on the road. The field gate I open as a 3-inch layer of soft snow across its top bar. The first flock I go to feed are away in a gill where their mothers and grandmothers have taught them to shelter when the gales come in. Mountain sheep have a sixth sense for the weather on their own territory. I find them under Scots pine trees, 40 feet beneath the danger of wind and drifts. The oldest ewes will have led them here and will stand stubbornly if the younger ewes try to lead them out to danger. The flock takes its cue from the elders. They know they are safe here, with tussock grass to chew on to keep them alive if the snow lasts for days. This place is almost as good as a barn, windless and watered by the beck that still carves the gill out of the mountainside. I throw emergency rations of hay down the sides and they gather to it. The ewes tug a gobful away from the slices and start to chew. With every mouthful I see them eat, I loosen up. Ewes that are sheltered and fed with some dry hay can survive here for days and days. I count them and learn that there are two missing, but then suddenly those two are tumbling down for the hay. Relief. These two young ewes have been to scratch through the snow for sweeter grass. They'll be okay now. They'll hold to the hay through the snowfall. But there's no time to dwell here admiring the scenery. I have other flocks to feed. The snow still falls heavily and the valley is changing about me.
James, it's a lovely book, A Shepherd's Life, because it delves into a past that doesn't exist anymore very much in English life.
I suppose it delves into a past that for most people has ceased to exist. And I think what I was trying to do was to say it hasn't died and it may still be really important, and there are actually quite a lot of people around the world who live lives that relate to mine. So I think I saw some United Nations statistics that show that something like 1.4 billion people on the planet are still farmers or grow things on the land, and something like two-thirds of those are small traditional subsistence farmers. So my experience is actually quite common in the wider world, but it tends to get forgotten about, or there's a feeling in the modern world that it's died or disappeared.
Do you think that some of the skills are being lost over the years, though, that there's not enough people going back to know how to do traditional farming?
I think that's a challenge. In our particular landscape, I'm thrilled to see how many kids want to do this. I mean, there's no shortage of 15-year-olds or 25-year-olds, both genders, that are interested in this. It doesn't look as gloomy as it used to me. It looks like the kids are smart. They know that they belong to a tradition and a culture that's interesting and good and beautiful and has a meaning. And I have a lot of faith in people's ability to keep the past alive if it's still relevant and it still means something. And to those kids, it seems to, and that fills me with hope.
Is that why you wrote the book partly, also to encourage others to take up this tradition?
That would be nice if that did happen. If I'm honest, that wasn't really motivation for writing the book. I think I wrote the book for a sort of slightly political reason, which is I don't necessarily like the way that many of us become in the modern world, and I don't believe in sort of nostalgia for its own sake, but I think we sometimes forget some of the values we had in the past and some of the sort of community values that we had. And I suppose I wanted to tell the story of my father and grandfather to try and remind people of what some of that is and why we might want to remember it.
Have you had sort of a positive response from other members of, say, the farming community or the traditional community? They've been happy that you've written this book.
I was a bit worried. If I'm honest, I was a bit worried about that when I wrote the book, whether my neighbours and friends and family would like it. But I've had a very humbling response. I think their response is that it's their story, so they're proud of the story, and they would if they were here, they'd probably say it isn't my story. I just got lucky telling it.